Hello, everyone. Welcome back to NSUMD's Sink or Swim podcast. This is Rama Bhatt. I'm a fourth year here at NSUMD. We have Dr. Gauri Bhatt today, who will discuss personal finances as we approach finishing our journey as medical students and begin our journey as resident physicians. Dr. Bhatt is a faculty member at Cox Business School at Southern Methodist University. She teaches in the executive, full-time, and professional MBA programs. Her research expertise lies in the understanding and analyzing of several attributes of banking industries in the US. Her research has been published in leading academic journals and focuses on the financial reporting by financial institutions. She worked in the financial industry before joining academia, and she earned her PhD from the University of Toronto and is a chartered financial analyst charter holder in the US. She holds professional designations in accounting and is a chartered accountant and cost accountant. So, welcome, Dr. Bhatt. Let me start by stating that as a student, especially a medical student who has not taken any business courses, it's pretty intimidating when I think about money. What can you share with us to make it less scary?
So thank you, Rama. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to talk about personal finance with future physicians. And you're absolutely right. Personal finance elicits many emotions, be it negative emotions like fear or envy, or positive ones like security or freedom. But you ought to remember one thing, that at the end of the day, money is just a medium of exchange. When you think of money or finances, think in terms of opportunity cost, what you give up to get what you want. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to suggest that money is not important. In fact, it's somewhat of a conundrum. Money can't buy happiness, but the things money can buy might make you very happy. So let me go back to the main point that I'm trying to make here, that when you think of money, think in terms of what you are giving up to get what you want. Let me use this simple example to elaborate on this point. So you guys are almost at the verge of finishing up your medical education, medical school, and you will be residents soon. And I know that you have your big match day coming up in March of 2025. Now, ma match day is over, and you all get the match that you want. You're delighted, you're happy to be pursuing whatever residency it is that you desired. And so, therefore, you decide to treat yourself to 4 days of beach vacation in Mexico. Now, this beach vacation is going to cost you $3,000. Maybe you have the $3,000 in your bank account, or maybe your aunt is going to gift it to you as graduation gift. Either way, the way you are thinking about it is, what are you getting? 4 days of beach vacation. What are you giving up? $3,000. What I want you to think about is that really true? Are you really giving up only $3,000? So, an alternate scenario is if you invest the $3,000 in the stock market today, and the stock market typically gives you a return of 7% over long term. So, let's go with that assumption of 7%. So, assuming you're around 27, 28 years old today, by the time you retire at, let's say, 65 years, this $3,000 today is going to be between 40,000 to 45,000 by the time you retire. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you should wait until retirement to go to a, for a beach vacation, nor am I suggesting that those 4 days of wellness are not worth it. And maybe you're going to tell me that those 4 days of wellness are going to be worth the $40,000 in retirement money. So the point I'm trying to make over here is start thinking in terms of opportunity cost. It's not simply the $3,000 that you're giving up, it is the $40,000 in future. And yet, you might still end up making the same decision, which is okay, but think in terms of a broader picture. What is it that you're giving up, and what is it that you're getting?
So, what does the term personal finance planning mean? So, what does this involve? What are some of the things that we can start thinking about?
So, personal financial planning can be very simple or extremely sophisticated, depending on the situation of the individual. Keeping that I'm talking to a group of medical students, let me start with two basic but very important aspects of personal financial planning. The first one is understand your finances, and second one, use your budgets. So, what do I mean when I say understand your finances? If any of you have ever looked at any public company, you know public companies have financial statements and they give you a balance sheet and an income statement and a cash flow statement. I want you to think in those terms, but apply it to your personal situation. Think of the snapshot of your position, which is like a balance sheet. What are your assets? Which means, what do you own? For somebody like you, Rama, it could be cash at the bank, whatever you have in your bank account, which you will appreciate is a very liquid asset. You can immediately use it to exchange for whatever you want. You might be fortunate enough that your family has created an investment account for you, and you might be holding some shares. Again, shares of a public company listed on the stock exchange is a liquid asset, but less liquid than cash. And then, if you belong to a wealthy family, you might actually be owning some property, an apartment somewhere, which again may be very valuable, but less liquid. Now, let's turn to in terms of what do you owe? Those are your liabilities. At this stage, you probably have a lot of student debt, and hopefully not, but some of you may have some credit card debt. So when you compare what you own with what you owe, so assets minus liabilities tells you what is your net worth. So that is one way to start thinking about your financial position. The second thing you need to think about is the flows, the inflows and outflows, like the income statement. So, as residents, I'm assuming you're going to earn residence salary between, let's say, 60,000 to 80,000 per year. And maybe some of you might be getting gifts at graduation. You might be getting some interest income, some stock dividends, some scholarships, some other sources of income. So, try to figure out what your income is going to be. I'm going to make this simple and say, on average, a resident is going to earn $70,000. Okay. Now, you have to appreciate that this is your gross income. Your disposable income is going to be after you have excluded taxes from it and any other mandatory charges that you might have to pay. So in this case, let's assume a 20% tax rate. So if you pay 20% on 70,000, that's going to leave you with 56,000, which is your disposable income. You need to start thinking in terms of 56,000 and not 70,000. That's your first starting point. And then start thinking about your expenses. When you think of expenses, you're going to have some expenses like, let's say, rent, which is going to be fixed. And it's a commitment that you have made by entering into a contract with the landlord. And then you're going to have some variable expenses, groceries, transportation, entertainment, and many of these might be controllable to some extent. So you may be able to control how much you eat out, or you may be able to control where you shop for groceries. So there is that element of a little bit of control in those expenses, and those expenses are variable. So it's not a fixed expense, but it depends on how much you are going to utilize some benefit, and the expense will be accordingly. Now, obviously, the third kind would be some non-recurring unexpected expenses, which you always have to be ready for. So in this situation, I'm going to make up a expense budget for you. Let's say your expenses during your residency are going to be 48,000 per year. So now we have a situation, your income is 56,000 and your expenses are 48,000, which leaves you with a surplus or savings of 8,000. Now, I want you to I want you all to take this with a pinch of salt. I understand that not everybody is going to be able to save money. You might have loan payments. You might have families during your residency. There's a lot going on. This is just a simple example that I am using to illustrate a point. So first, understand your finances, which is your assets, your liabilities, and then your inflows and outflows. So you have a picture in your mind as to where you stand.
So what I got from that was that my income, I should really only think about it as my disposable income. That's just my income I have left over after taxes and other mandatory charges. That's all I'm left with. My expenses can either be fixed committed, like rent, or variable and controllable, like eating out or groceries or entertainment. And then third, I can just think of these unexpected emergencies that might happen.
Exactly. And the reason I emphasize disposable income is people who start earning for the first time are often surprised by the amount of taxes that are deducted and the amount of mandatory charges that could be deducted. So in your mind, always be clear on what your take-home pay is going to be. Okay. So now that you have a better picture, let's talk about how do you evaluate your financial strength? So you know what your assets are, what your liabilities are, what your income is, your expenses are. Do you have adequate emergency funds? Now, a suggested number is 3 to 6 months of expenses. So in the example that I gave you, if the monthly expense is 4,000, it would be advisable to have about 12 to 24,000. So somewhere between that number in your bank account kept away as emergency fund. I know that it sounds very intimidating when you're just starting out, but think of it as a goal that you want to put aside this money for the rainy, unexpected rainy day that comes. So that's going to be your first goal, that to have an emergency fund set aside as soon as it's possible for you. The second thing you want to think about to evaluate your financial strength is, what is your household debt? When do you need to repay? What is the interest rate on debt? So in this case, let's say your student loans are about 200,000. And I know that you get a little bit of time before you actually have to repay your student loan. But that is something to keep in mind, that the repayment of student loans is going to start soon. And as I mentioned before, and hopefully none of you have it, but there is a possibility you have credit card debt. The reason I view credit card debt so negatively is because it carries a very high rate of interest, sometimes going as high as 20%, 28%. I've seen those numbers. So it is completely an avoidable kind of debt. So if you think about your emergency funds, think about your debt, and then you can think of some basic ratios. So what are these basic ratios that I suggest to you? Think of a basic liquidity ratio. How much liquid cash do you have in terms of your monthly expense? Let's say you have been successful in keeping that 12,000 aside in the emergency fund, which means you have about 3 months of expenses stored away. Higher the number, the better, but that is what is your liquid ratio. The next I want you to think about is, what is your debt to income ratio? When I say debt to income ratio, I mean payment of debt. So debt payments divided by your gross income or disposable income, depends on what we are looking at. So let's go back to the gross income. Your gross income is 70,000. Let's say you agree with the student loan authorities that your debt payment in that first year is going to be $12,000. So in this case, your debt to income ratio is going to be 0.17 when you consider the gross income. If you consider the disposable income, it's going to be 12,000 divided by 56,000, which is your disposable income, which makes it 0.21. Now, in case of debt to income, lower the ratio, the better is your position. Think intuitively about what it is measuring. It is measuring your ability to pay debt. Okay. So that is what you have with the debt to income ratio. The third thing that you have is savings ratio. How much can you save? So in our example, we had a saving of 8,000, right? You were making 56,000 in disposable income and you were spending 48,000. So in terms of savings, if I take savings as a percentage of after-tax income, your savings were 8,000 divided by 56,000, which is 14%. So these are some basic ratios that you can look at to make sure that you are at least moving towards your goals to become financially secure. So now that we have looked at your understood your financial position, let's turn to the budget. So you know what your income is going to be. You have an idea what your expenses are going to be. Create a budget. Determine your financial goals. They could be long term, they could be short term, they could be precautionary to save for the rainy day. Make sure your loans are realistic. Your goals may include paying off your debt. It may include saving money to make a down payment on a future home, or it may include a nice European vacation for you when you take a break. Whatever it is, articulate it. Make it your goal and work towards it. Prioritize your goals. And at the end of the day, remember it is always a trade-off. So you can take your European vacation, but maybe the trade-off is you can't save the down payment for the house. And I'm not trying to suggest that one is better than the other, but what I'm trying to suggest is be clear about your goals and work towards those goals. The second thing I highly encourage you to do is keep records. So account for your expenses and income, compare the actual to the budget periodically, and if necessary, update the budget, or if you find that you're always spending more than what your budget is, you need to question that and you need to make adjustments to your spending.
Absolutely. So, what are some of these milestones in our financial journey that we really need to plan out?
Okay, so we have covered your financial position. I suggested that you make a budget, but you all are at that age where there is potential for marriage, house, and kids if you so choose for it to be in the next few years. So let's first talk about the first big milestone, marriage. What changes with marriage? I'm going to say everything. So we like to think of love, especially our own love, as though it transcends money, but that is just far away from reality. And as uncomfortable as this fact may be, the divorce rate in United States is almost 43% for the first marriage. And research shows that there is a strong correlation between financial stress and divorce. So financial disagreements or disagreements about financial issues is one big marriage stressor. So what can you do? What can you keep in mind if that is the direction that you are heading in? First thing, marriage or living together. That is entirely a personal decision, but just in terms of the financial aspect, as a general rule, public policy tends to support marriage. The idea is get married and save some money. So if you think about social security, income taxes, estate taxes, retirement accounts, buying a house, all those things are a little bit easier and a little bit cheaper when you're married than when you're single. That's just the way public policy has been set up. So that is one consideration to keep in mind. The second thing is, assuming you're in a long-term relationship, living in or married, you need to be absolutely clear, both of you, that you're on the same page and you understand what is yours, what is mine, and what is ours. At any given point in time, you both understand those questions. So, what is community property versus separate property? Now, that has a lot of legal nuance to it. And it differs by state, but I encourage you that that is something you need to have communication about and clarity about. The other thing is, between the two of you, it has to be clear who is going to handle the money, take care of the bills, make sure the investments are done. And the other partner should always be fully in the loop, should always be aware of how the financial plan is working. And the last thing I want to bring up is prenuptial agreements. Again, that depends on your individual situation. There is no hard and fast rule whether it is the best thing for everyone or it is really not recommended. It will entirely depend upon your situation. But that is something to keep in mind as you enter the next phase in life. There is an excellent resource. It is basically a worksheet that walks couples through different issues such as credit, debt, assets, net worth, financial values of both the partners involved, and the financial goals. So I'm going to encourage you, Rama. I can share the link with you, and you can encourage you to post it for our listeners.
Absolutely. So some of these goals that they're talking about that they'd like couples to discuss are how would you want your finances to be different from how they are currently? How much money do you think you'll be earning, let's say 5 years from now or 10 years from now? Also, what you'd like your life to look like along with that. And then how do you picture retirement? What are things on your bucket list that might cost a lot of money? So these are some of the things that the worksheet will really help us work through.
Yes. And as you can imagine, two different people while dating who have not discussed it may have very different views on it. So it is very important that you communicate about these financial goals and issues.
Absolutely. Especially as medical students, we know how much debt we have from medical school, and some of us have debt from undergrad as well. So, especially if we're entering a relationship with someone else who's also in medicine, or even someone who isn't, it's definitely a good idea to discuss all of these issues. Okay. So, the next thing I'd like to know a little bit more about is when or if we should be buying a house.
House is the next milestone, right? Same as marriage. And we always get all this unsolicited advice from family, friends, neighbors. And these are the typical things that we hear, that it's always better to buy because mortgage payment will be the same or less than rent. It's always better to buy because you're creating equity rather than just paying rent to a landlord where you don't get anything. And it's always better to buy because houses go up in value. Now, I would say that all these things, generally speaking, are true, but there are several more things to keep in mind before you decide to get into the housing market and make such a high-value purchase. What about a down payment? If you don't have a certain percentage of down payment, you're going to be you will have to pay mortgage insurance, which is an additional expense. Once you have a house, there is home insurance involved. There are closing costs involved with the mortgage. There is maintenance. There are n number of other expenses once you are a homeowner. And as I reminded you before, always think in terms of opportunity costs. If you're putting down, let's say, $30,000 for a down payment, what else could you have done with those $30,000? How much could you have put in the stock market, in the bond market? What could you have earned with it? So, what is the opportunity cost of that down payment? So, what I'm trying to remind you is that, yes, in many situations, it appears as though buying might make more sense than renting, but not unless your financial arrangements are in place. You need to be able to make a sizable down payment. You need to have made sure that you have an emergency fund that we talked about set aside. And to some extent, I believe that you need to have started towards your goal of long-term investments before you get into, before you commit to this long-term asset. Now, is house really a long-term investment? That is where I beg to differ. It is not really a liquid investment because you are living in the house. And data suggests that if you adjust for inflation, housing is at the best a mediocre investment. And then there are all these other issues to think about, that there are differences between cities and neighborhoods within the cities. When you have a housing price crash like the one we had in 2008 and 2009, it can take years for housing prices to recover. And generally, to break even or even make money on a house, you need to have stayed in the house for quite a bit of years. So if you know you're not going to be in that house for too long, it is a huge risk in terms of a financial investment.
That's a great point. So housing is definitely something that we should all be keeping in mind, obviously, as we enter residency. A lot of us will be there from 4 to 7 years, but at the same time, it's not all that it's chalked up to be, especially living in Florida. I know some of us, we deal with the hurricanes, we deal with all these other things that we need to fix. I think it's important to keep in mind that there's a fixed costs that are associated with that that you might not have to deal with as a renter. The next thing I have a question about is how expensive really are kids? I know a lot of us are thinking about that as we start this next part of our journey.
I smile because you will often see this discussion in families where, especially the older adults in the family, assure you that you should be having a baby as soon as possible, and babies don't cost much but bring so much joy. Let me tell you that babies are expensive. Kids are expensive. They themselves might not demand much in terms of money, definitely in terms of time and energy. But what happens is with kids, what you need is a bigger home. You need to make sure everybody is well fed, clothing, health care, child care, education. And besides this, there are a whole lot of other things. You might be investing in extracurriculars, some special programs. You might be traveling more with your kids to show them the world. So kids are expensive. I know at this stage you are a little bit, even though you're thinking about these things, that's a little bit in the future for you. But I'm going to post a link to a website which goes into details of the cost of raising a child and gives you a very nice calculator, and some of you may find it very useful.
Absolutely. So that might be a great tool for some of us to really see how financially ready we are to have kids. The next thing I'd like to know a little bit more about is that retirement seems far away from us as we'll start working, but we do hear about it from our parents, extended family, and media. Is it something that we really need to worry about right now, given that it's so far out in the future?
I can totally understand that you guys are between 25 to 30 years old, and retirement just seems like millions of years away. Although I must warn you that those years go by fast. But let me start by asking you, where do you think we earn income when we are old? So, what are the main sources of income as we age, and when we are no longer working? First is Social Security, in which we have paid all the years while we were working. Second, income from our retirement plans. And third, income from investments. And then there's potential for some other sources. But let's focus on these three sources. So Social Security is a complicated formula. All of us pay into the Social Security fund. And I know there is talk in the media that by the time this generation gets old, there may not be Social Security and all. And there is a lot of political discussion about it. But leaving all that aside, I don't think US has a culture where there would be no Social Security. So that, I believe, in some form or the other will continue to exist. The second thing, which is income from retirement plans, there are two aspects to think about. While you are an employee, you have what is called a 401k plan or a 403b plan, which depending on what kind of company you're working for. So Plans can be defined benefit or defined contribution. I'm just going to talk about defined contribution plan because defined benefit plans are almost non-existent these days. So what is a defined plan, defined contribution plan? What it means is you put a definite amount, X dollars, into that plan every year. And by the time you retire, that money grows depending on where you invest it, and you are ready to have access to that money at the time of your retirement. Now, if you are self-employed, you won't have access to this 401k or 403b plan, but you can contribute to traditional IRA or Roth IRA plans. And I emphasize, especially if you go into private practice, you're self-employed, please make sure that you do not neglect retirement planning. Because if you're employed, you're in an environment where your financial planner from your work is going to come and ask you about your retirement plans. But when you're on your own, you may have a tendency to neglect these things. So make sure, whether you're an employee or whether you're self-employed, that you start contributing to your retirement plans. And last but not the least, you have income from investments. So let me talk a little bit about the retirement plans first, and then and the investments in a combined setting. So when you're thinking of your retirement funds, think about the contribution. Are you adequately funding the plan? Where is it that the funds are being invested? Is that portfolio diversified? What is the risk? Because remember, these funds, the retirement funds, are invested by the companies in most likely stock markets, bond markets, treasuries, and there is always a risk there. So you need to make sure that you know where your money is being invested and it's well taken care of and it's diversified enough that it is not affected by one sector going bad. And also, you need to remember and check what fees you're paying for the management of your retirement funds, because they can quickly add up and eat into the growth of your fund. One additional thing I want you all to think about is, slowly this retirement fund starts building up. And at some point in life, you will be tempted to go in for some high value purchase. And at that time, the temptation to withdraw from this retirement fund will be very high. And at the end of the day, it is your money. You're allowed to withdraw it, but it will come at a huge tax disadvantage, as well as some penalties involved. So to the extent possible, as much as you can avoid it, do not pull out money early from a retirement fund. So these were some of the things that you should keep in mind when you're thinking of your retirement fund. The other thing I want to talk about is whether it's investing in retirement, contributing to retirement funds, or investing. Remember that your choices, save little bit now when you're young versus save a lot when you're older. Now you're going to say, when I'm older, I'm going to have more money. Yes, that's true. But you're going to have more responsibilities as well. So let me illustrate it quickly with some simple numbers. Let's say today, when you finish your program in 2025, you're 28 years old. And from June, when you start working at your residency program, every month you contribute, let's say $240 towards your retirement account, retirement or investment account, whichever way you want to think about it. So every month you're putting in $240. By the time you retire at the age of 65, you're going to have $500,000. I'm assuming an average increase of 7%, which is what the data shows us that the stock market return has been over a long term. Now, if you decide that, I've worked very hard in med school and there is no way I want to contribute towards retirement and worry about that right now, I want to spend everything I have. and I'll start saving for my retirement 10 years down the line. So you decide that you're not going to start at 28, but you're going to start at 38, and the year is going to be 2035. If you start saving later, instead of the $240 per month, now you have to save almost $525 every month to reach the same half million target at retirement. So the point that I'm trying to make is very simple. Your option is you can save a little bit now, which grows into a big amount by the time you retire, or you can choose to postpone it, save later, but when you say save later, that is going to be a higher amount that you'll need to contribute.
Absolutely. So, some things for us to think about as medical students right now, like she mentioned, this goes back to how most of us are planning trips around match day. No one's saying that we shouldn't be planning trips around match day. It's an incredible celebration of everyone's hard work. However, that's one exception. There are some people, some students that might feel the need to be indulging in more expensive lifestyle during med school. As we say, we like to treat ourselves. We work so hard. We need to live as relaxed as possible outside of the school environment. We just need to think a little bit more about what we're actually spending. Like Dr. Bot has been saying, this is all an opportunity cost. Just because we spend 500, let's say, on some self-care each month, it's not really that 500. It's a lot more that we're giving up.
Absolutely, Rama. So the other point I want to add to that is that remember with all these retirement funds, especially if you're employed, if you are contributing $200 every month to that retirement fund, there is a potential that your employer matches it. And as a young person, it is often common to forget about it, not pay attention to it, neglect it. And it's money that you're leaving on the table. Let's say in this case, your employer is ready to match $100 per month for the $200 that you're paying into your retirement. That $100 from the employer is going to grow into $250,000 at retirement. If you don't take advantage of that match, that money is lost. So keep a lookout for these things. You are going to be busy with your everyday work. You are going to be busy with your family life, but do not ignore financial planning. The third thing I want to remind you is now, the way I told you that think in terms of gross income and disposable income, same way I'm encouraging you that when you think in terms of contributing to retirement fund, those $200 that we have been talking about, remember those $200 get you tax savings. So let's say your tax rate is 20%, which means that those $240 that you were contributing is not really the real amount you were contributing because you're going to get a tax break on it. The actual take home is affected only to the extent of 190. Okay, so I'm just throwing some numbers at you. You can sit with a calculator, do some simple calculations, but I'm trying to get you to think about taxes in two ways. If you're making $100, think about your after-tax income when you're doing your planning. So if you're making $100, think of $80, which you'll receive in your hand and that you can use for spending. On the other hand, when you're thinking about contributing, let's say $10 to a retirement fund, remember you get a tax break on that retirement fund. You don't pay taxes. So the government allows you not to include it in your taxable income. So it's not actually $10 that is less in your take home. Most likely it is going to be $8 less in your take home after adjusting for taxes. That's the way I want you to think about these things.
Wow. So you've given us a lot to think about. Are there any pointers that you have as we start thinking about beginning our journey as residents in the upcoming year?
So the first thing I would say to all of you is you all have worked very hard, not only in medical school, but I assume for the last 8 years, even in your pre-med. And You must have given up so many things to make sure that you study, you deliver, you complete everything. So first thing is be kind to yourself. You do not have to give up every small pleasure and save every dollar that you can. That is not at all what I'm suggesting with all this discussion about financial planning. What I'm suggesting is be mindful. So be very intentional. And even during your residency, when I understand that your surplus or your savings may not be very high and your expenses might almost eat away at your entire disposable income, still, there are a few common financial mistakes that you can avoid. First thing, living beyond your means. That is definitely a problem that you can create for yourself. So be very mindful of that. Second, mismanaging credit. Be careful, pay your bills on time, don't overuse credit, monitor your credit score periodically. Nowadays, you have all access to all this information through your bank, where it tells you if your credit score is updated, what is the reason for it to go up or down. So be mindful of these things, pay attention to them. And the third thing is lack of emergency funds. So be prepared. It's easy to assume that nothing is going to happen, but life throws curveballs at us. So live within your means, manage your credit well, and create an emergency fund. Those are the three simple goals that I would like you to think about as you start your residency. Once you progress in your residency, things start becoming a little bit easier. You start to get hang of things. You start making more money. Now you're getting towards the end of your residency. You're going to start your jobs as attending. The money begins to flow in. At that point in time, I encourage you to start thinking about retirement planning, investing, your insurance needs, including life insurance needs, and tax planning. So let me finish up by saying, I wish you all young, soon to be physicians, the very best. I would like to leave you with a final thought. I want you to think about money now so that you don't have to think about money or worry about money throughout your life.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bhatt. This has been incredibly informative. This has been Rama Bhatt hosting this episode of NSUMD's Sink or Swim podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in.